Well done. You're listening to Grassroots, www.innovationstudios.com. I'm Marcus, and you know what? This is the 50th, that's how we say it down in South Emway, 50th episode of Q&A. And it's been a bit of a roller coaster here and there. Got to 20 and then decided I wasn't necessarily going to do it anymore. And then a few questions were coming in. I thought, you know what, I'll carry on. If I sound a bit strange, it's because this time I'm in Northampton and I've got my little setup with my laptop again. I'm at Billing Aquadrome. I had a show last night and this morning I'm just regrouping in one of the little pods that they have there for the artist. And then I'll be heading back home later on this morning. But I thought before I did it, I'd just get this done. And then I can listen to it on the way home, make sure there aren't any glitches. Because you know what? I do listen to my own voice, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls out there. Because I have to listen back and make sure there aren't any glitches and everything sounds right. Otherwise, you only tell me anyway, right? And I get messages from all sorts of people going, what's going on? Why did you have glitches in the background? Sometimes you have glitches, it can't be helped. You have people doing work or we've been having the extension done and you can hear a bit of drilling or stuff like that. But now listen, for this episode, I was going to, and I say I was going to, do a special episode where it was 50 items that all grassroots musicians should have in their gig bag, or at least 50 items that they should have. But I've decided I'm going to do that on the 51st episode for a very, very good reason. And that is that I haven't finished the list yet. And because I want to make it fun. You know, the obvious stuff is, yes, spare guitars and things like that. But there are extra little things that I want to put on there and things that you should definitely have with you, apart from the obvious stuff like spare leads and spare guitars. So it's to give you a little insight, silly little things that you should always have, like business cards. You should always have a little screwdriver, just things like that, you know, but there'll be fun things as well. Vocal zones, for your sore throats and throat sweets and all sorts of stuff. So I'm probably going to do that next week. It may be the week after. I might miss a week next week because I'm away. So I probably won't, I won't be here next week because I don't think I can be bothered to take all my stuff next week where I'm going. You know, it's not that I can't be bothered for you, but I can't be bothered for me. So there you go. Look, you've got away with it. You got a good few weeks out of me, right? So anyway, look, I'm going to get to your questions. And this first one is quite a tricky question, but I'm going to answer it anyway. And it comes from Malcolm. Let me just have a little look here because Malcolm has asked a very, very good question. And he's kind of done it tongue in cheek, but he hasn't... I think he's just want. I don't know if you just want to put me on the spot, Malcolm, but here we go. Malcolm says, Malcolm is from Bexley Heath. I wondered, I'm certainly not having a go at you, just indicative of today's society, I got curious. Having heard your podcast and how you said you make a point of meeting and greeting before you go on stage, you used the phrases, hello mate, hello darling. In these days of gender fluidity, have you had any resistance or objections to those phrases? Right. No, I haven't, Malcolm, but that's not to say that I wouldn't have. I think when I say that I say hello mate, hello darling or whatever, it's usually to people that I've met before, and usually to people that I know or that I've played there before and they haven't taken offence to before. But if I'm playing a new venue, I might just... And I know this is very, very strange, but unfortunately, this is the world that we live in at the moment. So I will probably change my hello, mate, hello, darling to hiya, right? Because that kind of answers everything. So without getting too deeply into it and without... you know, a string of comments and everything underneath my feet as I sit here. I just feel that in these days, it's such a touchy subject. Now, I have had people who say, I'm not your darling. You know, I've had that before, but not for a few years. And usually if I, You know, if I get in there, get to a venue and I'm meeting and greeting. If I'm in a care home, for instance, where it's all, you know, elderly ladies, then chances are, I would say probably 99.9%. If I said to an old lady, hello, darling, hello, sweetheart, how are you? She wouldn't say I actually identify as a man, right? And likewise, I wouldn't say, hello, Ron, hello, mate, all right. He wouldn't say, look, I identify as a woman. That's not to say it wouldn't happen. It's just, and if it did happen, I would just say, oh, I am sorry. And that should be the end of it. But unfortunately, it isn't always. But, you know, you get done for assuming stuff and whatever. So if I change a very simple hello, mate, hello, darling, hello, sir, hello, madam, to a hiya, I'm not taking any risks. I'm keeping it safe. And the message is still the same. Hiya, all right. No one can take offence at that. Hiya, you all right? How are you? So I feel like sometimes, and you know, without getting too deeply into it, I think a lot of the time you can tell, you know, you can tell if somebody is a woman identifying as a man or a man identifying as a woman. There's something that I can't describe what it is, but I think you kind of know without going too deeply into it. There are a few signs, and I think you kind of know. And if you're unsure at all, just go, hiya. It's like somebody said to me about people who identify as them, and I wouldn't use them and they. I would say Sam said, and I use that because I think everybody knows the Sam I'm referring to, because he still identifies as Sam, even though he's a they. So if I were to stand there and say, I wouldn't say they were saying. When I was a kid, they meant that someone was schizophrenic. So I had a split personality. I don't use that as such. It's not to say I wouldn't use it, but I would use their name. I would say Sam said, you know, Lou said. So you have to be careful. But yeah, Malcolm, to be honest with you, it's a good question because I am free with it. Hello, mate. Hello, darling. All right. But I think if I ever felt I wasn't sure or in a new venue, I'd just try and play it safe. Hiya. Hello. All right. How are you? How's it going? You know, and even then, you know, you can't be sure. But I think you just play it safe, Malcolm. Just hiya. And then that's fine. Hiya. All right. Hi. It's safe. If you say, how's it going? How are you? There might not be a you. There might be a them. Oh, God. I can't even get started on that. But I think it frightens the life out of me, if I'm honest with you. It really does. It frightens the life out of me. So I think just keep it safe. Keep it as a hire. And in the end, I think nobody's going to want to assume anything in the end. I think we're talking less as it is. Nobody's talking to each other anyway because they're always on their phones. I always think the saddest sight, to get personal for a second, the saddest sight is when you see a little girl or something, or a little boy who are with their dad, and the dad's obviously, you know, it's obvious that the dad's got them for that day. There's obviously a split family or something, and she's just sitting there colouring in, and the dad's on his phone. And I'm like, oh, come on now. You know, it's not point a finger, but that's the world we live in. Everybody's hooked on stuff. Everyone's glued to their phone. And this is the thing where I always look at the situation is with somebody who's talking to me the other day, because we are talking about getting to and from shows, so it's kind of relevant to the podcast, is somebody said to me, what are you going to do when they bring in the electric cars? You're going to have to add some time to your journey and stuff like that. Now, that's the thing that I have a problem with, and that's the thing that I don't understand. Now, the environment and everything like that, fine. I understand kind of why they're doing it. They can sell me that argument to a certain extent. But we live in an instant society. We want to book tickets, we go online, we book it. We want a bag of Wotsits from Iceland, we can go on Uber Eats and do it. We want takeaway, we can do it. We want to watch a film, we can click on Netflix. We want to watch sport, we can click on Sky Sports. And we're all of a sudden got to spend half an hour at a electric station filling our car up when we could go in and get it done in 4 minutes with petrol. I don't think that society will stand for that unless you can speed up the amount of time it takes to charge it. I know people that look at different phone chargers because this one, they say things like, this one charges my phone up quicker than that one. You want your phone instantly charged. You want your phone to be constantly on. And I think, you know, if all of a sudden, you know, 10 years from now, I've got to get to a gig and the journey's normally an hour. And all of a sudden, the journey's an hour and a half because I've got to stop on the way and get petrol. Or I've got to stop on the way and get electric. So now I've not got a 5-minute stop. I've got a 30-minute stop. All of a sudden, if I've got to stop on the way back because I don't know how many miles I can get out of it, my journey is now a 3-hour round trip instead of a 2-hour round trip. So I'm now costing myself time where I could be fitting a lesson in. I could be doing some other things at home. I don't know if society will stand for it. It wasn't a question. It was just, you know, it's just something that I don't necessarily understand. But what I do understand about the world we live in is that the new generation consider slow Wi-Fi total abuse of their human rights. And you'll book something. I know the parents out there, you'll know what I mean. You book somewhere and you go, we're going to go camping for a week. And you go, there's a play park there, and there's a football pitch there, and then there's a swimming pool there, and we can go on the rides and the dodgems, and we can do all of that. And the first question you'll get is, have they got Wi-Fi? It's more important that they got Wi-Fi and the kids can watch a film on their cameras, and you know, than it is that they are on the sort of bumper cars and stuff. But this world's gone mad, absolutely mad. But look, I'm just me. I'm not trying to change the world. There are things I don't understand, all right? If you agree with me, give me a thumbs up. If you don't agree with me, I'm sorry. But I'm a bit old and I'm a bit naive, I suppose. Innovation Studios hoodies. Many colours and sizes available. Our logo proudly emblazoned on the front. The back can be personalised with your name or your nickname or anything you want, as long as it isn't too shocking. Click to order online, www.innovationstudios.com. Jason says, hi Marcus, loving the podcast. Thanks very much for your help. We've made a few notes over the last 49 episodes. we use a PA purely for vocals and one acoustic guitar. Is it important to get the speakers as high and as far forward as is safely possible? Yeah, it is, Jason, but you've got to make sure that if you put them too far forward, you won't be able to hear what you're singing. So that's okay if you have a monitor. You need to make sure if you're going to have the speakers more than 3 foot maybe in front of you, probably even less than that, a foot and a half, 2 foot in front of you, you need to make sure that you can hear what you're singing. The other thing as well, if you put them too far in front, and then to hear yourself, you've got to turn it up so it bounces off the back wall. Your vocals are going to be so loud. So I think it's important that you have as much bass as you can, but I don't think that putting them too far in front is ever beneficial. I think it always makes things sound a little bit unnatural. It's not all coming from one place. You know, it's kind of like going to see a choir and somebody stood 6 foot in front of the rest of them singing and you think, well, I can only hear them, really, you know. If you've only got a little PA and you want to get the most out of it, then yeah, you've got to do that. Sometimes you don't have a choice, but you need to make sure that you have something coming back at you, because if you don't, all you're going to be able to hear is the music. You won't be able to hear yourself singing, and everybody out there is going to be saying, all I could hear was the singer, I couldn't hear anything else. So as long as you get the mix right, the levels right, and you've got somebody at the back to tell you what's going on, there's nothing wrong with that. Jason says, also, when we're live in front of an audience, we can't always hear the click at the start of the backing track. Is there a quick fix for this issue? It's monitors again, Jason. But it depends, because sometimes you might have a click track. Some bands use a click track, stuff like that. You can get the in-ear monitoring on stuff, but you must have a monitor. It took me years to work out that my show was better for being able to hear myself, you know, and to enjoy the sound that I was making, or to embrace the sound I was making. I think there's a lot of this hiding behind, turning up everything and the vocals are just about there. And I think sometimes it's nice on stage to be able to hear what you're singing, and your show's better for it. If you have your speakers too far, like I said, you won't be able to hear yourself. And also, you won't be able to hear any click tracks or backing tracks or anything like that. So you good monitoring, whether it's in-ear or whether it's floor monitors, which are old school now, but I still love them. I still think they work great. You know, it's, I think monitors on the floor are a dying breed. Everybody has stuff in their ears these days, but I enjoy the normal sound of amplifiers and speakers. So you must have good monitors, whether you, whether it's for a click track or for, you know, in-ear monitors or just hearing yourself sing. Jason, who's on one, has said, and sometimes in a huge hall, if you're at one end, how can you spread the sound and get it to go further rather than being just vocals? Yeah, again, if you've got a really, really long hall, I think sometimes, again, it depends on the size of a PA. If you're playing a really, really long hall and you've got just two on stands and it's a really long hall, it depends. What you really want to try and do, depending on how many inputs you've got, is get, even if it's just a little bit of everything, you know, bulk standard would be maybe just a couple of floor mics that that are on little stands and just pick up the overall sound of the amps and the drums and then go through the front just to spread everything. That's just a kind of, what's the word? A sort of an old school way of doing it. I can't think what the word is, like caveman's way of doing it. Used to get a couple of floor mics like they use in theatres for tap dancers. And you just mic, have them pointing back and they pick up a little bit of the bass, a little bit of the guitar, a little bit of the drums, a bit of kick drum. Maybe sometimes an overhead either side, but again, it's space on stage, isn't it? So the best way to do it is to mic, you want to mic everything up if you can, get a little bit of guitar going through a little, so you've got a spread of sound. That's what you're trying to get, is a spread of sound in a bigger hall. Because if you've just got one speaker, one little amp at the back there, and that's going out, you need to be able to get it to spread. So you want a wider sound, not necessarily a longer sound. And a wider sound would be a couple of mics on the floor or miking up the guitars. You don't want much through because they're going to do most of the work. The amps are going to do most of the work. But in a really long hall, if you've got everything going through, guitars and vocals and everything going through the PA, only little bits of it, you can move the speakers, providing you've got monitors to hear what you're singing, you can move the speakers a bit further forward. And maybe even get, if you've got another two speakers that join onto that, run a couple of cables just halfway down the hall. But you have to have everything going through. You can't just have a singer going through the PA and then halfway down the hall just his vocals are going to the back of the hall and nothing else. So you need to spread the sound, make sure that a bit of everything is coming through the speakers, and then you can put a set of them sort of halfway down. And then, you know, that way it sort of negates that. But Jason, thank you for your questions. You're obviously a busy man and you're thinking about what you do, and that's important. If you find a better way, mate, please let me know, because sometimes you get a big hall and it's a real pain. Oh, goodness me, Jason, hang on a minute. There's another one at the bottom. Oh, P.S. Here we go, P.S. Right, let's have a look. Hang on, P.S. What do you do when the room is really echoey, like a sports hall? Roll the reverb off everything is about the best you can do. There isn't an awful lot more you can do than that, which is to just roll the reverb off of everything. Try and get everything as dry as you can. There are certain EQ things that make everything flatter, but realistically, if you're in a sports hall, it's like when somebody said, a duck's quack doesn't echo. Use your mind. If you put a duck in a cathedral when it quacks, it's going to echo. I don't care what the theory is. The theory is nonsense. Any sound, whether you're clapping, whether you're tapping a kick drum, whether you fart, in a cathedral is going to echo around. Right? It's great when it echoes around in a cathedral. The kick drum, that is, not the fart. The bathroom is the place for that. Sorry, Mum, if you're listening. But yeah, it's kind of, you roll the reverb off of everything, take all the echo off and try and do what you can to, you try and find, sometimes if you've got a choice of where you set up, there are certain areas that maybe are better than others, but it's pretty impossible to get it exactly how you want it, Jason. And, Yeah. Thanks for your questions, mate. I think you should be running a podcast next week. You've had a long go. Anyway, thanks, mate. All the best to you. And I appreciate your questions. I'm glad. I hope I've answered them, and I hope I've given you something to think about. Sounds like you're thinking about an awful lot as it is, mate. Need help setting up your own home studio? Why not book a consultation online? Here at Innovation Studios, we can help and advise on the best equipment for you, your ideas, your budget, and your space. Maybe even book a home visit. We can help you set up, install, and use your software, offering a recording workshop in your very own studio in your very own home, going through techniques and offering advice and guidance to get you up and running. Go to www.innovationstudios.com for further information. Michael says, how can you record your live shows? Okay, full band. These days you can get pretty much lots of different things. Zoom, I think it's a Zoom R16, where you can get something like 8 inputs. So you mic everything up, guitars and everything like that. But of course, if you're running a PA, you don't plug straight into it. So usually there's a monitor out. Usually two monitor outs on the... it's a lot of leads, though. To be honest with you, it's a lot of leads, Michael. But if you've got like a monitor one, that might be your stage monitor. Monitor two would be an output from each of those things, but you've got to mic everything up. But if you've got 8 inputs on your Zoom, then you can say, okay, maybe a kick drum and a snare and an overhead for your drums. Bass guitar, 2 guitars, what's that? That's 6, and then 2 vocals, that's 8. Everything else is, you know, overdubbed later, and there's no point in that if you record your live shows. If you're backing tracks and vocals, then you can record your live shows just with a left and right out, and it will take your live sound actually as you played it. You can't adjust the levels. So again, the thing is to take monitor out into separate things. R16, R8 doesn't give you enough, gives you 4. Inputs, but there are so many different things these days. The R16 works in conjunction with a laptop or with a Windows computer or whatever, you know, probably a Mac, that will give you, you know, probably 16 straight inputs in, you know. But I know it does 8 itself, and I recorded a band a couple of years ago called Supervillain, but I went into their recording studio or rehearsal room and recorded the drums on 7 tracks and the bass on the 8th. And then we overdubbed the guitars so that they had a decent demo. But I was able to, once I had the drums on individual tracks, was able to mess about with them and change a few things and program a decent snare onto it and use a few extra little things, like midis and stuff like that. But yeah, it's there are a few ways, but you really just got to experiment and try and do the best you can. It's not easy, Michael. It's pretty difficult to do and get successfully right, but it's getting easier. And if you've got a mixing desk with 8 inputs that your band's going through, and you've got a recording console with 8 inputs, you just take a mono out with 8 jack leads, a mono out from each one, or a monitor out, I should say, not mono out. Mono out is a different thing. Monitor out from each one into the input, and then you're individually recording each of those tracks, and then you can mix them afterwards. But it's trial and error, and these days there are probably 100 ways to do it, but that's sort of the most recent way that I used, and I am old school, you got to remember that. Well, I'm old and I went to school, so there you go. Music tuition online. Have your guitar, bass, mandolin, vocal tuition, even production live online. One-to-one tuition via Skype or alternative streaming media. Learn from the safety of your own home. For further information, please contact us at Innovation Studios at www.innovationstudios.com. Megan says, how can I stop my ears ringing? Turn it down a bit. That'd be my advice. You stop your ears ringing. These days, things have changed an awful lot, Megan, in terms of music. The on-stage sound, particularly when you get to a certain level, is a lot quieter than you would think. In pubs, pretty much the amps are doing the work and you're loud. But on stage, a lot of the time, your amps are fairly quiet, and everything is coming through the front with little feedback and echo and sort of reverbs and stuff like that. Because, more feedback if your amps are too loud. So these days, you just have your sound on stage a lot quieter normally, and the monitors do the work when you do certain venues. When you're in a rehearsal room and you're cranking everything up, then yeah, I mean, you're gonna struggle. In-ear monitoring is okay, I suppose, but I'm not a huge fan of it myself, because I think it's got to be really loud to get heard over the din of the band in a room. Realistically, it's just protecting your ears as much as you can at other times. So try to protect them. Don't have your iPod or your music really loud in your phone. If the only time your ears ring is when you're playing in the band, that's the best you can do. But, you know, tinnitus and things like that, you want to avoid that. Sometimes it's unavoidable at grassroots level, because you're playing pubs and stuff on a Friday, Saturday night where you've got to crank everything up to get heard. But there are earplugs and in-ear monitors and things that can take the edge off. They used to do earplugs that used to take the high end off of everything. And they were quite good. Although I didn't 100% get on with them. They made me sing a bit flat. I couldn't hear if the high end was the stuff that I needed to hear, I suppose. But shop around. There are ear defenders, but little ones that go in your ear, not a great big pair of headphones, you know, standing in a... that'd look good, wouldn't it? Front man, great big pair of headphones, like you're waving in aeroplanes or something. But yeah, there are a few options, and you've got to find the best one for you. But the biggest thing is don't blow your ears out by having your music in your car really loud, or having your music in your headphones. I mean, the in-ear headphones are the worst thing for that. Cranking it right up, you know, and having it in your ear doesn't do you any good at all. And you've got to be careful of that, really. Yeah. Susan says, what's the worst Travelodge meal you've ever had? Well, I'm assuming you mean stuff, not the Travelodge breakfast, because the breakfast provided by the Travelodges is really good. And particularly a lot of the Premier Inns and the Travelodges are usually linked to a pub, and the breakfast is great. But the worst meals I've had in terms of staying in a Travelodge are stuff like anything with a kettle. So normally, if you're trying to save money or you're on tour for a while and you have Travelodge food, Travelodge food is, apart from obviously the crisps and the chocolate and stuff like that, Travelodge food is pot noodle. It's instant mash, anything you can warm a kettle up and do, you know. But I did hear a story once of somebody I knew, famous darts player, Richie Burnett, who stayed in a Travelodge and didn't have any, the kettle wasn't working, so he drained the radiator and put it in his pot noodles. Which I don't even want to go there in terms of how disgusting that must have been. But needs must. And sometimes you have to just find a way. But yeah, the most disgusting Travelodge meal, apart from Richie's pot noodle, probably just stuff like the instant mash and stuff like that. Because you've got no butter in it. And the other thing as well, sometimes it's nice to take a loaf of bread with you. And little things that fit in your bag, but you think your buttermilk, it's just a nightmare trying to save money when you're staying in hotels and travel lodges. It's impossible. But the worst is, nothing against pot noodle. Pot noodle is really nice, but for some reason in a travel lodge, there's something about the water in travel lodges. It's never the same. You have a cup of tea in a travel lodge, it's just crap. It's not like normal water. It's nothing to do with the service but there's something to do with the water where I don't understand it, but it's different. Yeah, I don't know. It sort of, if I'm honest with you, it gives me the squits, and I'm which that's why I try and avoid it. Take some bottled stuff in there. It's worse than going abroad for getting the squits. But things like travel lodges and I love travel lodges and Premier Inns. I've got no problem with them at all. But the waters, yeah, something about the water there. I can never work it out. There you go. Alice says, Marcus, who's the most famous person you have met? The most famous person that I've met, probably Muhammad Ali at a book signing in London. But That would have been about 1991. He did a book signing. I was about 17. I queued up. I had to buy his book to get him to sign it, which is fair enough, I suppose. But yeah, it was Waterston's in Holborn. And we were working in the building next to it. And I suddenly saw a sign that he was there doing a personal appearance. And we saw him get out of the limo. And I'd gone down and bought the book and reserved my place. And I managed to meet him and get him to sign it, which was wonderful for me. I think he's an absolute legend. The greatest musician or the most famous musician I have met. I mean, I've met people like Jerry and the Pacemakers and people who were really, really famous. But in my eyes, I met Steve Harris from Iron Maiden years ago, and that for me was massive. I didn't meet him for long, but they had a football team, Iron Maiden FC, and I was going out with a young lady whose dad was the referee for that match. So I was allowed in a changing room to meet Steve, and he signed a vinyl for me. And he was, really gracious, turned up in his Jag, totally normal, no airs and graces, playing football. Really, really nice guy. No problem at all. And for me, it was massive because I'm a huge, huge fan of Iron Maiden, and I'll continue to be that. Ever wanted to play guitar? 10-minute tutorials now on YouTube. Beginner's Guitar. Marcus takes you through the early stages, tuning, basic chords and strum patterns to start you on your journey. Further information, go to www.innovationstudios.com. All right, one last question, then I want to get some breakfast in me and get on the road. Let's have a little look here. Can you get vinyl skins for guitars to change the paintwork? Yes, you can, but they're a real pig to put on. But yeah, you can get them, and they're in the shape. You cut them to shape, and yeah, you can. But they're very difficult to put on. I bought some, and they're really hard. But they are. They're like a big sticker that you kind of you have to find a way of unraveling it, and it all gets stuck together, and you never get it flat. I can never get it flat, but then there are probably professionals out there that can do it, but just what a nightmare. But you can get them. Have a look on eBay. Stan says, can sweat affect the electrics of a guitar? Yes, Stan, of course it can, because it's water and you're playing the electric guitar. Sometimes wax the pickups, a little bit of wax, not much, just a little bit around the edges, just to stop the water getting in. I think I might have answered that question a couple of weeks ago, but you can put a little bit of wax just on the edge. I've never had to, but then in pubs you don't tend to sweat like Angus Young, but you sweat enough, and if you're playing something electric, you've got to be really, really careful when you're doing that. Scarlett says, when recording, is a tambourine and other percussion important? Hello, Scarlett. And a tambourine can pick up a chorus, really can. If you suddenly start having a chorus, just adding the tambourine can kind of tighten everything up along with an acoustic guitar. It's not vital, but if you feel that music's missing something, it just needs a little lift. If you haven't got an acoustic guitar on it, put an acoustic guitar on it, because that would be percussive. But sometimes a tambourine can lift it up a little bit and just take it up a notch, and just brings out a bit more percussion and just makes it drive along a little bit better. So Dennis says, is there a faster and more efficient way to set up rather than all be in each other's space? Yes, your drummer should arrive first, Dennis. Get your drummer to arrive first and set up and be done. I know it's a pain in the ass because drummers don't like it. They like to get there at the same time as everybody else, but they need to be there half an hour before. And when you get there, drums are already in, cases are already out the way, and you can start commanding your side of the stage. But there's no foolproof way of doing it. If you all arrive together in plenty of time, then let your drummer set up first. Keep out of his way. Don't be trying, because they've got the biggest cases. I feel sorry for drummers, really, because we play smaller venues and we can take smaller amps, but drummers always taking the same stuff, I think. So Yeah, that's really it. You just got to keep out the drummer's way, get the drums in first. Danny says, I heard you mention you have a Gibson Les Paul and you couldn't find a new bridge and tailpiece as it wasn't standard size. I have the same problem. Can you advise on where you found it from? And also, can you advise on where you found it from? And the other, what he actually said was, can you advise on whether you found one and also where you got it from? Well, Danny, I found it on eBay. I just put in Gibson parts, but I had to send messages and say, what year is your Gibson? And to try and find it, it was pretty tough. But I found one and I was really, really happy to do that. So shop around, have a look on eBay. That's always your best bet. I'm going to call it a day at that, because I've got a lot to do today, a lot of travelling ahead of me. Thank you for listening. Listen, next week I'll be back. I've got a couple of really great questions that I'm going to answer next week. And also I've got the 50 important things that grassroots musicians should have in a gig bag. So we'll see what happens with that, all right? So until I see you all, or I won't see you all, until you hear me, how about that? It's been a pleasure listening to me. And I will catch up with you. I'll catch up with you next week, all right? 50th episode. That's ridiculous. I thought I'd probably do about 3 and people would go, rubbish, something else. But there you go. Listen, I'm out of here. Have a great weekend, all of you. If you're gigging, take it easy. Don't have it too loud because your ears will ring. And look, I'm out of here. Got a long drive back. Love to all, love and respect and all that other stuff. That's it for me. I'm signing off. www.innovationstudios.com. You can email me at innovationstudiosuk@gmail.com. You can find my Twitter now at grmusicuk. I've changed it. And also you can find me on Facebook and various other social media, Instagram and stuff like that. Look, I'm out of here, all right? Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye for now.